Production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
A major step forward for the redevelopment of the fairgrounds tonight on Behind the Headlines. I'm Eric Barnes with the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us. I'm joined tonight by Paul Young, Director of Housing and Community Development for the City of Memphis. Thanks for being here again.
Thanks for having me.
Along with Bill Drees, reporter with the Daily Memphian. So the city has named partners in the private development portion of the Fairgrounds project. The Fairgrounds project is big and complicated. We'll try to break all the various parts down. What does this mean, this kind of partnership, the private developers who've been named, and what part of the Fairgrounds property does this impact?
Yeah, so this is a significant step forward for us on the Fairgrounds. We've named M&M Enterprise in partnership with Bellpoint as the developers for the site. The site is located on the northern part of the fairgrounds, so it's the area where currently there's a running track and green fields. It's between the Children's Museum and Early Maxwell. So many people have seen that site. It's open green space. We're looking to relocate the track to the southwestern portion of the site, which is where the youth sports facility will be. This is where Liberty Land was. So the important thing about this selection is that the private development drives the tourism development zone revenues. And the reason it drives it is because sales taxes is what drives tourism development zone revenues. As those sales taxes in that area grow, then those sales taxes will be refunded back to the city to pay for the youth sports facility. And so this is a significant step towards us making this project a reality.
And so that piece on Central you're talking about, and I should say that M&M Enterprise, one of the partners in that, there is headed by James Macklin and discloses a board member of ours at the Daily Memphian. But that private development piece, is that where that's a potential hotel, potential retail, like restaurants and such, and multifamily has been talked about?
Right, so it'll be a mixed use area, so there'll be retail, obviously, because that's what drives the sales taxes, a hotel, and we've talked about multifamily being on upper floors. And we like that concept because it allows for some built-in market for the retail. So not only would the retail be driven by the visitors and users of the youth sports facility, but also you'll have the area immediately adjacent as well as the residential units above.
And the TDZ, just, you know, going through these incentive and all, you know, there's TIFs and TDZs and pilots and so on. TDZ, the area that will capture, it's incremental growth in sales tax revenue, right? So if it's X amount now, the idea is that as you build these new things and they drive more spending, more sales tax growth, that growth pays back this money that's going in, that the city is putting into the project, right? The simplest
exactly.
level. Over how many years is that growth measured?
So it's measured for 30 years.
30 years
and so the state will give us a baseline year, which is when we start the construction of the project. Once we start construction, the idea and the reason that the state gives this type of incentive is because you're building a tourism amenity. But for building this project, you wouldn't see the growth in sales taxes. So the state says, if you're going to build this great youth sports facility, is going to bring in all of these families, more people are going to spend money in this general area, and those sales taxes that come as a result of this thing can be rebated back to the city.
A couple more in this and I'll go to Bill. There are TDZs around the state, mm-hmm. right, all over the place, and sometimes they're very overtly, you know, tourist attractions, sometimes right. there are things that, like this, that might, you know, people living there, people local, a mix of locals and tourists could be using this
right.
this facility you're talking about. There's a TDZ downtown, right,
that
people may know, that is fueled a bunch of city investment down
right.
there as well. The will there be partners to be named on the youth? We'll talk a bunch about the youth sports complex, but are there other partners to be named, or is this the only, this group, that's the private partners, and everything else is going to be city control?
Yeah, there will be other partners that will be named. There will be tenants, there will be occupants in the youth sports facility, there will be an operator for the youth sports facility that will be named. But in terms of private development, physical development, this will be the primary partner to bring that to fruition.
Okay, let me bring in Bill.
Paul, it's no accident that this is the Central Avenue frontage. This is probably where more people drive by than any other part of the fairgrounds, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, we see this as a great opportunity for retail. It's obviously immediately across the street from Christian Brothers University, an important corridor in Midtown. So we think that it'll be a great destination for our hotel and for retail.
Several versions of this ago, there was a parking garage that was also a very tentative part of the plans, but that's now been moved, or it was moved a little while ago, to another part of the site, correct?
Yeah, we keep moving things around and trying to figure out the best way. Obviously, we wanted to try to capture a garage near the youth sports facility. We're still going back and forth as to where that garage will be located. What we're trying to do is make sure that we are offsetting parking losses on the site. We know that this is an important area. We have great economic development that comes from the football games and the Southern Heritage Classic and the AutoZone Liberty Bowl that comes to that area. So we want to offset parking to the extent possible. So we're still playing around with where that garage will go. Mm.
Sometimes the Children's Museum has closed and offered its space as parking for the football games, for the Tiger football games, the Southern Heritage Classic, the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. Are those other areas there around the track, has that also been used as parking for the games?
I know that it's been used during the Southern Heritage. I don't know that they use it during other games, you know, any areas where we are impacting parking, I know that the area where Libertyland was, the grassy area, which is where we're looking to put the youth sports facility, there was parking there during game days. And so we know that it's going to be an impact on parking. So we're trying to do everything we can to minimize that impact.
And the sports complex where Libertyland used to be, that is going to be a city project. That will not be private development. You'll use a private general contractor,
right,
to build it, but that's a city project.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
And do you know yet about use, what the mix will be of tournaments that might come from out of town versus local use on it?
Yeah, we hadn't finalized what the mix will be. We're working on selecting an operator right now. The operator obviously will help drive that. We'd like to have a mix of out-of-town tournaments. We want to create our own tournaments that'll drive revenue. We want to have things that serve the local population. So, you know, this facility will not have tournaments 24/7 every day of the week. So we want to figure out how to program that downtime with local organizations and programs.
Once you start construction, there's nothing like construction to generate interest, and people saying, hey, I want to do something there. What kind of response have you had? Have you had some other ideas that have kind of floated to the surface as a result of just word of what you're about to do?
Yeah, we get interest from a lot of different places in terms of how they could use the youth sports facility, whether they would like to be a tenant. We've had people, you know, contact us with ideas on how they could use some of the buildings around the youth sports facility, like the Women's Creative Arts Building, the Pipkin Building. You know, our hope is that we continue to get ideas around the Coliseum. I know that's been a big point of conversation, and the Coliseum Coalition has obviously been very active. They did a cleanup a few weeks ago, and they have another event planned in September. So our hope is that as we get this project rolling, we'll generate even more interest. And so things like that will have greater opportunity as a result of what we're doing.
We'll come back to some of those buildings you just mentioned, but just a couple clarifications on the youth sports. So the operator will be a private entity that runs and rents. It won't be city employees running this youth sports facility. That's what you're saying. So it'll be owned by the city, but not operated by the city.
That's
that
right.
Distinction between, okay. Whereas the private development, the hotel, the mixed use you're talking about, that'll actually be owned. They'll own the buildings and I assume kind of do some sort of ground lease.
Yeah, we're looking at a ground lease, long-term ground lease to keep the land in the public realm, but still have that type of development on the site.
The youth sports facility, there are a couple things that I get that people ask about or that I see and comments on articles and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. There isn't enough interest. And some of that is, I think, from, and I don't know that there is, I haven't seen the feasibility study, but I do know just from personal experience and experience of friends, youth sports high-paid, expensive travel sports right. is a big business. And we had Kevin Kane on here, I think, what, a year ago or something, talking about more numbers. I mean, it's a huge business of people, volleyball, basketball, soccer, all these things where the tournaments generate a lot of money. The families pay a lot of money. It's right. expensive.
Right.
So that's a big business nationally that I think some people aren't aware of. The other pushback that we get, so let's just right there. What are the expected numbers in revenue and the feasibility study of youth sports going right there?
Yeah, so we did a lot of analysis before we came forward with this plan. We spent about a year working on that. What we found was that youth sports was one of the only industries to continue to increase revenues during the recession nationally. So some have called it a recession-proof industry because families continue to try to create those opportunities for their kids. And so we know that we have a potential to grab that market. You couple that that potential with that industry with our already strong tourism sector, we believe that we will be a strong destination. When we start talking about specific numbers, we did some pro formas to show how the building would could potentially operate. We showed that it would be able to cash flow positive over the first 10 years. And so that was the most convincing thing for the mayor, was to make sure that it was cash flow positive.
And a quick detail here, just to stick on this, because I get so many questions about, because people are like, youth sports facility, and then they don't know. So it'll be an indoor and outdoor space? So will there be baseball fields? Will there be, you know, outdoor lacrosse? I mean, is that all determined yet?
Yeah, so we're looking at an indoor youth sports facility that will focus on indoor track, basketball, volleyball. So that's
not
that's
baseball, because a lot of people know travel soccer, travel baseball are huge. Okay. The other thing that you get is, and we've talked about this before in the show, and I know you've heard it from people, is, well, but in a city where a lot of youth don't have the opportunities for fields and sports and basketball and volleyball, and in a neighborhood and near a neighborhood, you know, like Orange Mound, but I mean other neighborhoods in Memphis that are very poor, why is the city creating this thing that's only going to be for the people who can afford to buy their way into this very high-end sports complex?
Yeah, I would answer that in two ways. One, I would say that, it was a point that I made earlier. What we want to do is try to figure out how do we program this facility so that it can serve visitors and our existing youth. So we want to work with different nonprofits and organizations that can use space during the week, during downtime when there aren't tournaments in place. The other thing that I would say is, because we're using the Tourism Development Zone, it creates a unique opportunity where we're using resources that wouldn't otherwise be here. What I mean by that is, if you don't build the youth sports facility, then you don't see the increase in sales tax revenue, and that the money doesn't exist. It literally doesn't exist unless you build it. So we're taking advantage of a resource that is neutral in terms of the budget for the city, but it creates a value add for our economy.
Okay, Bill.
So going back to the Central Avenue frontage, 18 acres for the hotel and the mixed use, that was one of eight city properties around the city that the city took RFPs for, request for proposals in the vernacular of City Hall.
Right. So how
are the other parcels coming up? Because the other seven parcels are not at the fairgrounds. They're in different parts of the city and could be used for a variety of purposes.
Yeah, so let me just run down what those eight are. So it's fairgrounds being one. Two of them actually were not owned by the city. That was the Pinch District, which St. Jude owned, and another one was in Raleigh, which was owned by United Housing. On the St. Jude property, they did get responses, and they're still working through that selection process. There were two sites in Raleigh. There was the one that United Housing had, and there was the one that's at the Raleigh Town Center.
On Powers Road.
On Powers Road is the one for United Housing. The Raleigh Town Center is where the Raleigh Springs Mall was, 19 acres there. On both of those Raleigh sites, we didn't get any responses. So we're down to the remaining, which would be the fairgrounds, Tillman Cove in Binghamton. There was a site in South City, which is just south of the I Am a Man Plaza on the same block. There was also the Crosstown Mound, so the big mound of dirt over near Crosstown. and then there was Historic Melrose High School. On all of those, we did get responses. Fairgrounds, we just talked about. We're announcing that on South City, we'll be working with Tyrone Burroughs as the developer for that project. Tyrone Burroughs actually owns the funeral home, R.S. Lewis, which is right adjacent. He actually owns property across the street from the site. So we were really impressed with his vision, and he'll be able to bring forth a strong project there. And we're also announcing that at Tillman Cove, Elmington Capital will be the developer for that site. And Elmington Capital has done a lot of affordable housing development throughout downtown area. And we're excited about what they'll bring to the Binghamton community.
How much has what's already happened in Binghamton played into Elmington coming into the area to do housing?
I think it certainly played into it. Elmington came into the city and they concentrated a lot of their work in the downtown area. They just finished a project up in Uptown area, and they were looking for other opportunities in other parts of the city. Binghamton obviously is what I believe going to be one of the fastest growing areas of the city. And the reason I believe that is because of its proximity, its location, the momentum. The community is very engaged. And we think it's important from a city perspective that we have some affordable housing baked in, because we feel like when we talk about gentrification, which is something that's happening in, you know, a lot of the stronger markets across the country, it hadn't really happened in Memphis yet. And we think that that's one of the areas where it could happen first. So we're excited about this.
Mm-hmm. A whole bunch of stuff to break apart. But real quickly, the Melrose High, was that one where there was not an RFP response?
No, we did have a response on Melrose High. We're excited about it. We're still working with the community, with the developer. There was only one respondent an eligible respondent. And so we're working with that team and the community to get to a project that everybody's happy with. And on Crosstown Mound, we have a little bit more work to do. We do have some very, very strong projects that have been proposed, but we want to have some more community conversations before we make that selection.
So people want to learn more about these proposals and all that. They go to the HCD website?
We don't have much on the website about them yet, but we will get some information posted in the coming weeks because they're still under review.
Okay, but people want to, you know, have, there'll be public meetings. I mean, how do they watch and get a chance to have that kind of community conversation?
So there will be a public meeting, and we will announce that in the next week or so. We hadn't set a date yet,
but we will
certainly have it on our website as well as the city website.
On Tillman Cove, that is a rather modest looking apartment complex that was built some time ago in that area. Is this going to be new, or is it going to kind of work with what's on the landscape?
Yeah, the vision is for a new development that will have different styles of housing. So you'll have some more dense housing on the frontage part along Tillman, and as you get deeper in, because it's a pretty deep site, it's about eight acres. Mm-hmm. As you get deeper into the site, you'll have lower density housing units, townhouses, and things of that nature to blend in with the housing that's immediately behind it.
The Crosstown Mound was an area that was built up when everybody thought that the interstate would be going through there and through Overton Park. Does that get leveled down? Is there remediation involved in that site?
Yeah, the Crosstown Mound is a little bit complex because we still have some work to do with the state. Right now there is a restriction that prevents the site from being used for anything other than a public use, so we'll be working with the state to see how we can get that restriction removed. But both plans that we are contemplating for the site do call for grading the site. So we would have to remove all of that.
And to clarify where that is, it's to the, it's right at the highway. It's strange because if you go down from Crosstown to the west of Crosstown, mm-hmm. there are what feels like a vacant lot and a hill.
Right.
And I guess I'd driven by there a handful of times, but it's actually a graded slope that was part of the highway going out over, you know, and crossing what 240 right there.
Exactly.
And so that's where that is, this Crosstown Mound, which sounds so strange. Let's go back to something you just talked about with the 6-7 minutes left here. You mentioned gentrification and mm-hmm. low-income housing, and we've talked about this before on the show. Right. Which I think we talked about the context of South City. So mm-hmm. South City is the big, it is replacing Foot Homes, and what was the other one that was part that was
Claiborne.
And Claiborne. Yeah. Thank you. The traditional two-story kind of. For some people, it was home, and I don't mean to take Absolutely. Away from that. For other people, it was kind of people have used. You know, it was a place to warehouse the poor. You know, right. was a phrase that people have used. That is all being replaced. That's to the southeast of FedEx Forum, and Correct. A huge amount of construction that's going on there. Federal money, a lot of private money, mm-hmm. a little bit of city money that's in that mix. You talked about gentrification. For some people, that's a very dirty word. Right. That means pushing out poor people and disproportionately pushing out people of color. To other people, gentrification means no, you're bringing in investment and you're improving right. neighborhoods and you're bringing activity. So in what sense, how do you define gentrification and what's going on in South City and some of these other areas you're talking about and are focused on?
I mean, I try to keep the definition of gentrification simple and just say it's when an area goes from a place where people can afford to live to where they can no longer afford to live. And I think sometimes we see places that become residentialized. So you take an old industrial area with a bunch of abandoned buildings and vacant lots, and you start to redevelopment, think Union Row. And some would use the term gentrification. I think that's an overuse of the term because there's nobody living there. So that's not gentrification. When you have gentrification, you have buildings that are being purchased and people that are being priced out and then they're having to leave. And even what we've done in some of the Hope Six and Choice Neighborhoods projects.
Which are the replacement of the old traditional housing
replacement
projects.
Replacement of public housing. Exactly. I mean, I think that's displacement for sure. And there's certainly an impact, but it's not necessarily gentrification because the areas around it, the values didn't necessarily increase. And so I think in Memphis, we're just getting to the point where gentrification is potential. And so it's an important time for us to invest resources because we need to preserve affordability in these areas.
For Foot Home, I mean, the displacement issue, which is obviously wrapped up in this, that was one of the criticisms of some yeah. of the previous tear down and rebuild of public housing projects, that the people who had lived there, that maybe it wasn't attractive to certain people, but that was their homes and that's where they'd grown up. So with former residents of Foot Homes, will be invited and able to move back into right. South City. That's about to happen this summer?
Yeah, so this summer you'll start to see the first phase begin to lease up and we'll start opening units. So that'll be at the latter part of the summer, so early to late August.
Okay, and Bill, with 4 minutes left.
And the new homes and rental places are going up on the site as we speak. It's a very busy site.
But this
wasn't an easy haul for you because about the time that you started moving people out of Foot Homes, there were two Section 8 complexes, among others, whose tenants were vying for new places to live, too.
Right, right.
So the places for all of these folks to go, they were pretty tight at the time.
Yeah, there were roughly 700 to 800 families that were looking for housing all at the same time in the city of Memphis. And it was a big push. The Housing Authority and Urban Strategies and a lot of folks did a lot of work to make sure that all of those families were appropriately placed and found housing. The team is still working with those families that moved from Foot Homes to ensure that they are successful in the places that they live. Urban Strategies is the team that is focused on the people side of the work in South City, and they've done a great job of keeping in contact with the families and maintaining relationships so that as we begin to lease up, they know that this opportunity exists for them to come back. Some will choose to not come back because they've moved on with their life in other places, but many will decide to come back.
With just a couple minutes left. There were three schools in the South City area, Vance, yeah. MLK, Transition, and another one, Georgia Elementary.
Mm-hmm.
Are you all going to take those and try to convert those or not?
So we've actually released our option on Georgia Avenue.
Okay.
We did an RFP for entities that wanted to occupy space. And what we found was that there wasn't enough demand for us to try to do the redevelopment with two schools. So we kept our option with MLK with the schools. Okay. We're still evaluating how we'll use it, but we do think that we'll have a workable plan. And on Vance, the school board has decided to demolish it, which we think is a good thing because it's a lot
right
of space.
That's right up against this redevelopment. So is that potentially an area then for redevelopment like South City?
It is a potential for redevelopment, although we aren't necessarily doing it at this time.
Let me go back to the fairgrounds and run through a few things, because I can hear the folks from the Coliseum not literally, but figuratively calling me saying, hey, didn't ask enough about the Coliseum. The future of the Coliseum, there's a lot of people who historically, and this is a city that's done some pretty amazing historic renovations, and they have great plans for this. Is the city's view still that there's just, it's time to mothball the Coliseum, or are you just listening and waiting for a viable plan?
I think we're listening and waiting for a viable plan. I mean, that's our goal, is to figure out something that's going to be financially feasible, that doesn't become a drain on city resources. That's our primary goal. And we think that by having new development around it, it opens up opportunity for the Coliseum.
Did the vote this week by city council to really clearly preclude Graceland, Graceland from opening anything like a 6,000 seat arena that would compete with the FedEx Forum, did that make it less likely in your mind that the Coliseum could be converted into a viable concert arena?
I'm not sure. I mean, okay. I don't know that I didn't really think of it in that way, but I think that whatever happens with the Coliseum, it has to be financially feasible and it has to meet that test of not competing with the Grizzlies.
And then you talked about parking and all this development on the fairgrounds. I think there are a lot of people who want to know, will there be any green space left, public open green space left when all this development happens? How much green space will be left that's just open parkland or kind of effectively parkland?
We'll certainly be working with landscape architects to ensure that there's green space on the site.
All right. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Bill. And thank you for joining us. Join us again next week.